What is up, podheads? We are back with another installment of the Potty of Slate podcast. I am Tony. I am joined, as always, by Anthony and Nate, and there might be some sharks swimming around in here as well. But yeah, hey, Anthony, Nate, how you guys doing?
I'm good. I'm dodging sharks in the water here, but other than that, I'm good.
The shark? Like Greg Norman, the shark?
Yeah, right. We don't have Greg Norman, the shark, but we have the guys from Trawl. We have Sean and Seth back with us again. How you guys doing?
Doing great. Psyched to be back. Thanks for having us back.
Yeah, definitely. Excited to be here again, man.
It's one of those things, like, we assume people are excited to come on, and they say yes, so, we just assume they're stoked, but you guys actually said, yeah, we're stoked, so we're going to believe you.
Definitely.
Well, that check's in the mail that you guys, you know, said to say that, you know, that we were excited,
yeah,
so we're excited
right.
for that, too.
Paid to say this.
You guys have had we're recording this at the end of February. You've had a pretty big February. And
yes.
we haven't had you guys on since what, like about a year ago, maybe a little bit less than that. And since that time, you guys have put out an EP last summer, which you let me, Tony, do the emceeing at the EP release party in August. And Tuan and I are on a song, which we've talked about before. And then the beginning of this month in February, you opened for Black Label Society, Exodus, and Anthrax, right?
Absolutely insane. Far beyond something that we ever thought that we'd get the opportunity to do. But yes, we got to play at Cross Arena on February 2nd with the almighty, legendary Anthrax, Black Label Society, and Exodus. So just still reeling, still blown away from that opportunity. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we just being even like thought of in that conversation to play that show, and like given the opportunity when they came down the pipeline and were like, hey, things are moving ahead accordingly. And it was super exciting. And I'm still reeling from it. I mean, it's been pretty much a month since it hit, and still reliving all the time we spent at the Cross Insurance Arena and getting to walk the underground halls of it and, you know, walk by dressing rooms with names on the doors. And we're like, hey, ours had a piece of paper with our name on it. That was fun.
Right.
No, it was just exciting. And especially just the notice we were given for that show. We were given basically a week. And it was grind. As soon as we got the information, it was go. Go, go, go. And we pushed, we called in favors, met up with people like Tony and Twan coming out to meet us at the old Guitar Center to pick up some tickets from us. And we just pushed our asses off and tried to make some waves, pun intended.
But what I think most people don't realize is all the prep that goes in the day of. Like, what time do you guys even show up that day? Because I remember you guys said you were taking the day off, which you had to.
Yeah, I think we all took 2 days off, but we ended up taking 2 days off. But I was there by about 11 o'clock. They do merch check-in because Cross Arena and other large venues like that, basically, merch is kind of a handoff process where, you know, you do a count-in and then the venue's merch people take your stuff and you don't see it again until showtime. And basically they set it up, they sell it. There's a, you know, kind of a percentage built in that the venue takes, which is totally okay for, you know, getting to do this, you know, something that we've never experienced and had the opportunity to do. But to have your merch alongside Anthrax, you know, right next to their gear was so cool in and of itself. So I was there at noon doing that. And then we kind of got our bearings and found where we were supposed to be. And I think everybody was there by 2:30, 3 o'clock. And then our load in time was 3 to 4. So pretty early operation. And, you know, the day of show agenda, as far as the whole operation, there were people there at 7:30 that morning, you know, forklifts, unloading tractor trailer trucks, and it's a massive operation. But and we were just like a very small part of it. But
man, for that show schedule, were you given like an all access pass to be able to kind of roam free, or was it like you come in at this time to avoid running into someone like Scotty? And
they were cool about it. Like, I mean, they didn't tell us that we couldn't go anywhere, and we could pretty much go where we wanted. But we were kind of like, you know, the respectful kind of like local bands, ninjas. We were like, all right, okay, we're going to come in, we're going to do our thing, we're not going to get in anybody's way. So I didn't get to meet like Scotty. I would have loved to have met Scotty Ian or Joey Belladonna or, you know, any of those guys. I know our photographer got to meet a few of the people as we were all walking around. But John, did you get to actually connect with anybody or meet anybody when we were there?
I generally didn't. I mean, going back to the load-in time, like got there like 2:30, and when we got in there, it was, I mean, they were still setting up the merch. So there was like, you could see where the merch was going to be. And at that point, we're still putting up the Anthrax, BLS, Exodus stuff. So our stuff was absolutely like hidden in the background. Like they didn't even give a spot yet. But like getting in there, like day show, we didn't even know if we were going to have like a quote unquote dressing room. We just kind of figured we'd show up, put all our shit in the back hallway behind the stage, basically load onto the stage, load off the stage, and then find a corner to tuck everything into. And we got lucky enough that we were given a room to basically like put our shit in, you know, basically a chill out area. So we hang out, talk, kind of calm ourselves down. And once we got in there, we probably shouldn't have, but we were roaming around. We were being very respectful. Like we weren't like ducking into like dressing rooms and being like, who's in here? Let's fucking take pictures.
Yeah, got to watch Black Label and Exodus sound check, which was cool, and just basically roam the halls and just be excited to be there. Like it was just such a cool thing.
But I mean, we getting to be in the Civic Center, or it's the Civic Center to me. I know a lot of us old Mainers.
It's Civic Center.
The old Mainers, it's the Civic Center.
Cross always going
to be the Civic Center. But being able to go, yeah, who that?
Future sponsor, Cross Insurance.
Being able to walk underneath the building and like see the tunnels that like the hockey players come in and out of and stuff like that. I mean, that was fun. We did walk past all of the tour's dressing rooms, because it's funny, if you were there, when you get into the venue to get down to where they called the pit, the floor, like y'all walked past our dressing room multiple times. Like that's where we were, like right in the front of the building. We were basically underneath the merch. And then to get to the stage, we had to go the length of the friggin' arena, come out the back, you know, hidden tunnel, and then walk through the Zamboni entrance. And you know, it was cool. We walked down, we saw their whole production room with all their, you know, the staff, basically, you know, tour managers, the, you know, supervisors and all that stuff were all in there working. Like the whole time I was walking by, I'd look in and they're all still on computers, typing stuff away, like finalizing the day and working on the next day and possibly even the day after that.
It was cool to work with the tours people too, because we were emailing back and forth for a few days with the, you know, the stage manager and production people. And one of the guys working for the tour works for Korn. When they go out, he works for Black Label Society. So, you know, to be just emailing back and forth with someone and their email signature says Korn, you're just like, okay, all right, this is pretty cool. This is legit.
Yeah, man. Right.
Yeah.
For those who have never been to Maine or never, you know, gone to the Civic Center or Cross Insurance Center Arena, I can't remember which one. I think it's Arena in Portland.
Arena
right?
In
Center
Portland.
In Bangor.
Yeah.
It's an 8,000 cap venue. So it's not a little hole in the wall, you know, 200 to 500 person place. This is a big venue for especially for our secondary market in Portland, Maine. So it's a place that the five of us have all been going to for years, seeing shows there, big ones, small ones, whatever. And to get to see you guys on the stage that night, because Twan and I both went, Nate couldn't fly in. We tried, but Nate couldn't fly. You see, in.
Nate's not dedicated.
Shame.
Understandable, man. Yeah. Understandable.
Hey, pay for it.
He's got an asterisk next to his name.
Yeah. Someday when the pod can do that stuff, we'll fly Nate in. But yeah, we were able to, you know, get there for you guys' set. And I mean, I've seen you guys probably, I don't know, 8 times at this point.
Yeah.
And it's the best you've sounded. You sounded so fucking good.
So thank good. You, man. Thank you. That makes us feel good. Like,
I remember Tony you. And I were looking at each other like, damn, they sound so good.
Awesome. That's I love hearing yeah. that. That's so cool. Cause like, it's like you can't tell from where you are. I mean, we've got monitors, but our mix is like completely different than what's happening out front. So actually it's funny. Adam, our drummer, couldn't hear me very well on bass. I think Justin said he couldn't hear me very well. So like, even though we had a ton of monitors, like our mix, you know, was, and the other thing too is, you know, because, you know, we're not running the big wall of amps like that are behind us, because Exodus, Black Label, you know, Anthrax, they all had like walls of amps. We've got our simple, modest, you know, we showed up in 4 vehicles set up like a local band does. So when you're not standing in front of, you know, it's such a big stage, when you're not standing in front of your rig, you're kind of losing, you're losing your sound. So as much as we're like trying to run around and try to put on, you know, the biggest, best show we can, I'm like, okay, I got to get back to my rig for this part, because I know I'm going to need to lock in with Adam. And if I can't hear myself the right way, I'm not going to be able to, you know, nail that part. So, but it was a cool challenge, man. Like, I would play there any day of the week. Like, if they asked us to do it tomorrow, I would do it.
Yeah. From my understanding, we had our own like mix board kind of set up. Like the rest of the tour was kind of already preset. They'd done their sound checks and, you know, triple checked everything, but we were kind of separate. Like, our monitors weren't the same monitors that they were using. Like, we had a specialized set, from my understanding. I was talking with Nick, the sound guy, and he basically mixed us the whole time we were playing. So he was kind of on the fly, being able to like change, you know, stuff here and there. So it was really cool. Like Seth so said, it was interesting being on the stage with all those monitors. And like, I'd get close to Seth and all of a sudden I couldn't quite hear Justin. And then I'd get close to Justin and it's like, no, I need the bass now. So I had to keep like running back and forth. And I got my 10,000 steps in that day.
Oh,
for
it's
sure.
a big stage. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to ask that because you get a lot of real estate. This isn't like a small club, you know what I mean? But I did see photos from the stage, and with all the monitors, like, there was less room up there than it looked like anyway, from the fans' perspective. But you were busy up there, Sean.
It was tight, man. I mean, it's not the tightest we've ever played on, that's for sure. Wally's holds that candle very brightly, because every time we've played Wally's, we've always had to set up in front of the drum riser. And the big problem is Adam has a fairly big drum set, so I've got about 6 to 9 inches of like walking space in front of his drum. And it's like, okay, this is where I'm living here for like a song and a half. There's a lot of going in front of the monitors, which then I lose everything. I just have kind of this weird ambient front of house, back of house, middle of cookie sound. But yeah, it seemed tight, but surprisingly it was enough room to be able to move. And, you know, enjoy the experience, because that was the big thing, is I wasn't sure if I was going to be allowed to touch or put my foot on anything, because, I mean, clearly that tour coming through, they have a lot more money invested in that than, you know, Trawl showing up in 4 vehicles. And like, there was a crew there that were helping us unload, and we showed up and we're like, yeah, no, that's it. And they're like, wait, what? And we're like, yeah, we one guitar,
yeah,
like case, couple amps. There's the bass and a couple, like an amp. It's like, we're not a crazy touring band, guys. We're from, you know, 15, 20 minutes down the road. And they were like, oh, okay. And like, every one of the crew was amazing. All those people that helped us load in, load out, you know, helped us set up and tear down. They were absolutely phenomenal crew of people.
Yeah.
And I wish I had their names, because I would give them as much love and praise as I could. They were friggin' phenomenal. One gentleman helped blow up that giant shark we used for Cardon, and he had fun with it. He said he was going to crowd surf on it, and I was like, do it. I don't care.
It was cool for us because, you know, we're not used to people even helping us move our gear on stage. Like, that's not something that generally happens. I think it might have only happened one other time. I think when we opened for Nonpoint, there was a crew moving our gear, but like, I'm always like super thankful. I'm like, thank you so much. And I don't think they're used to being thanked that much because it's just sort of like, I think sometimes maybe like a thankless job for them. So, you know, I think they're excited that we're excited. So it's like, it's just cool when, you know, you get to play a show like that and it has a full staff and crew to be able to kind of run things so that, like, you know, because I feel like half the fatigue you feel as a band at 2 a.m. after a show normally is being professional furniture movers who sometimes play music. Right. You know what I mean? Like, so it's like,
I love that.
It's like, you know, that's basically what you do. You move all your stuff around so that you can play for an hour and then you got to move it back to where it was. So
just show up with a laptop, just do the whole backtrack laptop thing. And
yeah, exactly.
Tour magic, baby.
Tour.
I can't do that, man. No. I got to feel the live action, you know, laptop. I'd be jumping on it some reason.
You could feel it that night. I mean, there was some power coming from those speakers, and that's allowed. That can be a loud room, especially for a show like that. So you could definitely feel it. And
yeah,
you know, carrying your stuff in. I mean, you guys are truly grinding right now, but it's paying off. You're getting to see some of these, like, you opened for Nonpoint a year ago, and then you're, you know, opening for Ra a couple months back, and then bam, now you're getting talked to by our local kind of behind the scenes promoter people to have you added to this massive tour that rolled through. That, I mean, we saw part of it last summer at Tattoo the Earth, Black Label and Anthrax. That's and right. It was cool to see them again. I mean, I remember Anthony and I, we've said this, the Black Label blew us away that night in August. Amazing. And again, I mean, again, this time they were awesome. So it's wild to see you guys, you know, up there with those folks. Pretty,
that was
pretty
freaking
cool
awesome. Like, I, of the three bands, just because of when I grew up, you know, I grew up listening to Black Label. And when I was a kid too, I also got to go to, John DeServio used to do a bass clinic, and back at Daddy's Junkie Music, maybe like I'm gonna say 06 07, something like that, I got to go to John DeServio's bass clinic and you know, grew up with those records, like in high school and stuff. So like, to get to share the stage with them was something really special. I mean, Anthrax too, obviously, like, amazing. They were a little bit before my generation growing up, so I've, you know, check their stuff out, and I definitely dig it. But like, Black Label is very special just because it was part of that, you know, early 2000s coming up, you know, high school movement for me. But
yeah, say Anthrax for me was in the early stages for me. But like, Black Label, that was the third time I've seen them. Exodus was, that was the first time, but they were always one of those bands that was kind of on the edge of my listening. Like, I'd hit them once in a while, but it wouldn't be a deep dive.
Wow. So now that you've played, as we call it, the Civic Center, the Civic Center,
Civic Center.
Yeah, Bob, Civic Center.
I mean, all the influences that you guys have talked about in the past, we've all seen Tool there, bands like that. Like, now you've shared the stage with them, same stage. It's insane to think about, but where do you think it goes next? Like, do you think that kind of opened the door to maybe, I know you know you're talking to the manager that also manages Korn. Do you think this is a new path, you know, kind of a new doorway?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think we're becoming accustomed to playing shows at this scale, getting to, you know, be selective, try to make the smartest moves we can. We've had some awesome help in doing that. And our next move currently that we have planned is we are headlining our own show at Aura June 30th for our upcoming EP release party. So it's a different animal because, you know, we just played the Civic Center, but we played the Civic Center as an opener for some legendary bands. This is our own show. So, you know, if anyone's going to show up, it's going to be because they hopefully dig us, and you know, we're gonna have some support bands on there. So this is gonna be a big challenge for us. It's going to be definitely a time to grind and a time to, you know, use this awesome chance that we got and the momentum from it to hopefully parlay that into getting to do our own big show, which I'm really excited for.
Yeah. The opportunity, actually, I feel like it's not only did it open the eyes of some of the people around the state, especially like promoters, venues, stuff like that, but I feel like it also opened up more people to us, where we got to meet a lot of cool people after our set. When we got, you know, we walked around, we went and sat at the merch table, and a lot of people came up and were like, "We've never heard of you. You guys are amazing. Are you really from here?" And like a lot of the people, like just trying to get to the merch table, sit down and hang out with the fans, because that's what we wanted to do. It was kind of hard because we kept getting stopped and people were like, "Oh my God, I've never heard of you." Or, you know, we see people we knew and they wanted to hug and talk. And it's like, I really want to talk, but I got to get over here. I want to do this to make sure that I keep the promise that we made of being at the merch table and trying to say hi to people. And they want to come get, you know, CDs signed or shirts signed or just hang out and talk. That's fun. And I think that helped us a lot more, in a sense, where more people got to hear us, because we had a lot of friends there and that was awesome. And I'll never, ever take a grant, but it also helped with people who never heard anything we've done before. There's like, who the fuck are these guys? Oh, okay. That was kind of cool. And we've been, I mean, we've had multiple fans contact us through email, you know, people on Facebook, Instagram, just hitting us up and being like, "We thought you guys were amazing. Didn't know you guys were a band." We did have a couple people. I can't remember where I saw it. It was like a Facebook post, but some people were kind of complaining that some of the local radio stations weren't doing their, you know, due diligence and pulling their weight, showing off the new and upcoming bands that are in the area, which kind of made me feel good in a sense that people wanted to hear us on some of the local radio stations. But, you know, just being able to get there and open other ears to the Trawl sound and kind of get them stuck on us or interested in us was, I think, a huge momentum shift for future progress. I mean, there's a lot of people who have already talked about the June 30th show, because we actually got that show that night. We're able to announce it that night, and people were like, "Yeah, I'm buying tickets as soon as you got them on sale." So that was really exciting. And it's still, honestly, I'm still kind of shaking with excitement from it.
Yeah. And we literally got approved to play that show while we were at the Civic Center, like getting ready. And I was sending like flyer graphics and the stuff to them while we were at the show getting ready, because they wanted to announce it the next day. Luckily, I had some stuff kind of in my back pocket that I was like, "All right, I think this will work. I think that'll work." But
stay grinding, Seth. Just yeah, stay grinding.
Dude, like, I love this stuff. And, you know, it was so cool. I think one thing that was unforeseen that I felt from the scene in general, from other local bands, our friends, other local musicians, is this sort of like sense of responsibility for what we were doing, because every other local show we've played, even opening for some of the nationals at smaller clubs, always just felt like a band on their own doing something to try to help further, you know, to do something further afield, to help, you know, push their career forward. But this felt like there was this responsibility as like a music community to deliver on a good show and do the local scene proud, where they're saying, "Listen, we vouch for you guys enough to get you to this show. All of us collectively are supporting you. You better friggin' not, you know, mess up this opportunity." So I'm so happy with how it went, and just, you know, proud that we got the opportunity to kind of show that we could rise to the occasion. So,
well, I think they recognize how rare it is. Like, I think we were talking that day before, you know, when was the last time a local band opened the Civic Center? One, but two, I don't think that whole tour had anyone else on it besides those three bands.
No, they didn't. Yeah, and I think count on one hand, like, I know Twisted Roots got to open for Ozzy back in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Sidecar Radio got to play with 311.
South Portland boy right there. Yeah, Corey.
Yeah. There's a couple of bands, like, can literally name on one hand. I think there's a few more. I've seen some locals at the state. You know, I've definitely seen plenty of locals at the state over the years. But the Civic Center is like a whole other thing.
I was just say, I know that we were sitting there talking and trying to list them off with some other friends of ours. And, you know, Rustic was definitely one of them, because Rustic Overtones is kind of like a mainstay in Maine. Everybody knows Rustic because they're the local boys. Twisted Roots was more of the hard rock mainstay. And just being able to be one of those fingers added on, maybe we start the second hand, is mind blowing. And it's like Seth said, being able to try to step up and show that the local scene here in Maine is capable of doing our damnedest to put on a good show and show up, was daunting. But then once we got like to the stage and started, all those worries went away, because we knew we had a job to do and we wanted to do our friends and fans proud, especially, you know, given that opportunity. And I think it helped, you know, having so many friends there kind of smoothed out the butterflies and the you know, other worries that we may or may not have had.
Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine walking out there the first time and seeing all those people. Shit, Sean, how nervous was I at your fucking EP release with the people in the small, real small stage at Pinome?
That was funny though.
You've got to just let it roll, you know. And you can tell sometimes when somebody's nervous, you got to give them something to break that ice. So like giving you shit was the way to get ice broken, and then you calmed right down, and boom, there it was.
But it was, I mean, just to see, to have you, I was nervous for you guys walking out on the stage, but I knew you'd kill it because I'd seen you do it. So Maine is a sleepy town. People don't realize that, but it's also got some fucking grit to it. And we, I mean, just look at the three of us, look at the two of you guys and your two bandmates. We grind. Like, we know how to grind. We know how to work. We know how to put ourselves out there, and you don't get half-assed from people that give a shit about what they do and love. And I mean, you guys do it, we do it. It's why we love you. It's why you guys are, you know, champions of the podcast for us. It's so cool to see that stuff kind of go to the next level. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Definitely. And thank you. Know, likewise, you know, it's been awesome over the last year to see all of the cool guests that you guys have had on. You guys have had some amazing shows, and I'm just a big fan, and I'm, you know, always happy to come back and chat with you guys, because it's fun to just geek out on music, but also it's an honor for us as, you know, locals to be one of the guests amongst some pretty amazing guests that you guys have had on. So
right on. We love that stuff. We love hearing that stuff. The EP release party at Aura, June 30th. You were saying, like, you know, you got to make sure you make the right move, right? You're coming off this high of this big show. I think that is the right move. You announce it, get plenty of runway, get people hyped on it. And by announcing it at that show, you're getting people locked in. But one thing, we were chatting in the group chat, I go, Tone, is this a new EP, or are they like re-releasing from the Murky Depths? Because it feels like that just came out. So what's going on, guys?
Oh, yeah. So this is a new EP. From the Murky Depths, we were trying to do an EP a year, roughly, you know, maybe a year and a half. But this new one, we've been working really hard. We've workshopped one song a few times, and people seem to really dig it. We played it at the Civic Center. It's a fun song. It's a quick song. We're hoping that it makes enough noise to be able to maybe get onto that terrestrial radio up here, and maybe, you know, nationwide would be cool. But yeah, the new EP, we've got, we're working, we're already recording bits and pieces here and there. You know, we had Tony and Yutuan on the last one. we do have an idea for Knate to come on and do something for this new EP. We just got to find a time to schedule it and get him like locked in so we can set, you know, it'll probably be remote, but we're excited NPR to Nate, have baby. Him part of it too.
Nice.
Yes. We need that. You know, it's crucial for a song. And if it fails, then the song's going to fail and we got to blame him.
Well, yeah, come on. You need a scapegoat. I love it.
No pressure.
I'll fly in again. I'll gladly fly in, but you guys got to pay for it. I'm just kidding.
I mean, hey, we're a local band. We're broke, man. Come on.
So, yeah, to kind of explain a little bit about, you know, where we're kind of at creatively, a year ago, when we came on last, we were working on From the Murky Depths. We had just got Adam Nichols, our drummer, joined the band full time, and we had most of those songs already, you know, tracked, and we added Adam in sort of kind of last minute to complete that EP, but we didn't get to write those songs with him. So, you know, he brought a lot of new energy to the project, and we were just immediately feel like we had a busy year last year. We got to do some really cool things, and I feel like all that excitement kind of turned itself creatively and being able to, you know, write some new songs right off the bat. It just felt like, you know, we all had that kind of, the creative juices were flowing. So we just said, all right, go with it. And we wrote 5 more songs pretty quickly at the tail end of last year and at the beginning of this year. And we had this opportunity to get out in front of putting a new EP out there at Aura, doing this EP release party. So we kind of put the cart before the horse a little bit by saying, you know what? All right, this is when the show is. Okay, that's when the EP is going to come out, because why wouldn't it? Like, why wouldn't we make that happen? So we're giving ourselves a deadline on this one to make that happen. But we all feel really good about it. And like I said, we've got the songs are in motion. So we feel good about the timeline of things, but
hopefully there's no vinyl release in there, because you'll be waiting a long time for that.
Yeah, no vinyl for at least, you know, nice. Like release day, no, but I definitely, I'm not giving up. I want to do a vinyl. It might end up being a collected pressing of several EPs, or maybe it's a future release, but I'm not giving up because I love vinyl and I want to press a vinyl, but...
We're in.
We're right there with you. Be cool to have that in my hands, I'm not gonna lie to you, but I'm happy to have the new music first. So make right. The music, we'll have it ready for June 30th, and I mean that's gonna be a blast.
Yes, that's gonna be so much fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The we've gotten artwork from an artist that we've worked with before. He did the original Carchardon single artwork. He came back and he doesn't really do commissions anymore, but he was willing to come back. And after Seth kind of worked his, you know, magic mojo on the guy, he was able to kind of agree that he wanted to do this again. And he came out with a pretty phenomenal cover art that definitely encapsulates what we, or at least Seth and I, have in our heads. Because, and I don't know, Seth, do you want to let that out of the bag yet, or?
I'm okay with that. I think we can let the name of the EP out of the bag.
Okay, yeah. So the third Trawl EP is called Cosmic Aquatic. And nice.
I like that.
We kind of went, we gave this guy these, you know, ideas and what we were thinking of. And the cover art is exactly what I had envisioned. And Seth, I know I can see it behind you. It's blurred on this video, but I know it's there.
Is that why it's blurred? I love it.
Kind of.
No, it's not. It's not. So there's an explanation behind it. So basically, this artist, he's from Greece. I found him 4 years ago, and he did the Carchardon artwork. But then, you know, a year or so later, he got called upon to make a few posters for Tool's Fear Inoculum tour, which was pretty amazing. Like, for him, he was just like, this is
amazing.
an absolutely insane opportunity. So he's like, okay, no more commissions. I'm focusing on doing like tour posters and stuff like this. And I'd hit him up in between there, cause I think I asked him to do something for From the Murky Depths. And he's like, no, I'm busy. You know, I'm working on tool related stuff. So I'm like, no problem. Like, but I was like, I'll hit him up one more time. And so picture, you know, sort of the aquatic shark-esque type stuff that we have for imagery mixed with sort of the style of Alex Gray with, you know, skeletal muscular structure, sort of space chakras, more like metaphysical. We have some like a really cool theme going on. So
I love this. This is exciting.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that convo between right? you guys.
Yeah.
Because that's where it ended. Like, where did it start?
Well, okay, so it started because Seth and I, being the geeks that we are, we've always had this conversation that at some point in a movie cycle, when you have like 3, 4, 5, 6 movies, you end up in space.
Everything ends up in space. Jason
was in space. Hellraiser was in space. Everything goes to space. So that's the start of, and the name came about because Seth and I were just messing around with a bunch of stuff. And originally it was Cosmic Aquatic. It was one word. And I was like, yeah, we kind of were like, that's a little ridiculous.
Might be hard for people to say or remember. So,
yeah.
But it worked. It worked for Outkast. Yeah. They pretty much make up their own words for album titles, you know, but we were thinking about it. We're like,
that's right.
So you're going to make t-shirts that say sharks in space, right? You have to.
We have to, yeah. I think that's a must. But so we're having a blast with this theme. There's even a song on the EP that brings about this theme, and we've got a couple of new we got some new styles going on, some new sounds that I think were definitely unforeseen or unplanned. That just when the four of us as a unit play together, what came out, which is cool. You know, I like to write, not, you know, giving too much expectation to what it needs to be, basically just letting it be what it is. And if that, you know, stylistically, if it goes in one direction or another, I obviously love playing slap funky stuff. So there's going to always be some of that on there. But other than that, you know, excited about some of the new directions of it.
Yeah. The newer sounds that we've got going on this EP for the five songs, I feel like we've definitely dug extremely deep into our collective like influences and stuff. And the song Seth mentioned that Seth and I had a brainstorming session about like this song, and it's a song when we started to write it, Seth goes, hey, this would be good for those lyrics you had written like forever ago. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I started messing around with it, and it worked almost too well. And I was like, ah, something's not right here. So we kept going. And it's like, this is perfect. It works. It fits. It flows. It feels really fun. And then we got to this discussion of like, okay, here's the name of the song, but we need to have like something after it to kind of help spice up the title. So this brainstorming session turned into, we came up with this parenthetical at the end of the song that is an acronym, but it also spells out the word shark in the acronym. So we're keeping that, and just we're rolling with the oddity that we love sharks, and now they're, you know, intergalactic shark invasions are happening, and we're just excited about all that, you know?
Sean, 20 years ago, when we were selling shoes as, you know, teenagers and early 20-year-olds, I did not foresee this conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a thing.
I love,
you know,
it.
Some of us grow up, some of us don't.
No, I haven't grown up either.
I love it too, man. Why? Why should we?
You guys are talking about movies going into space. So I just looked it up. Sharknado never went into space.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
Well, it's on the record that they
made
do,
five of them, but they're not in space.
If they do, they owe them. You guys royalties.
There you go.
And they should use one of your songs.
Number six.
They should.
Number six.
Lucky number six.
Hey, we got a song for it too. I mean, it's funny because the song that we're talking about, I wrote the lyrics down. I had this really hard, it was after we went and all saw Clutch together, you know, Tony, Seth, you know, Seth and I brought our wives and Tony showed up as the
I was the fifth wheel. Yeah, I was the fifth wheel.
But I had this really big Clutch kick and I started writing this song called Omega Rock Six. So it's just kismet that Sharknado 6 has to go to space and they got to bring us on for that song to be in the soundtrack. I'm sorry. Has to happen.
I might be sending an email to a producer later. Who knows?
Nice.
Later. I'm writing it now.
Yeah, nice. On behalf of the boys from Trawl, we are the Pawnee and Slate podcast and we have a song for Sharknado 6.
Hell yeah. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody's got to do it.
I mean, Six Gig made it on, what was it? That movie about beer? What was that movie called?
Oh, they
made it
on the soundtrack. That's right.
The Beer Fest?
I think you're right. I think it might have been Beer Fest.
Paranoid Social
Beer
Club. Fest. Paranoid Social Club right at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Wasted was the part of the, it was part of the closing credits.
How dare you get your main legacy acts confused.
Hold on. So Six Gig was played during a Super Bowl. I do remember that. They were part of a Super Bowl. So. He's not wrong. It just was a different entertainment area.
Right. They did make it out there. They did make it out there to the national stage. Yep.
And we learned recently that some of that video was filmed at Skydive New England.
Yeah, true.
Sam Feifel was a writer here in Maine that commented on a tweet that we had put up and said that he went and covered that and it was cold and it was at Skydive New England. Yep, in Lebanon, Maine.
Deep Maine lore for you.
That's again, we're back to the deep Maine lore, which you're only going to get here, right? Jesus. Nobody's looking for it, but here it is. All right. So, boys, we got a big things coming. We have big things that happened recently. All the big things continue to happen. We're going to keep it going. I think I'm excited for the rest of the year for you guys just because it's fun to watch our friends, you know, succeed, thrive, do that stuff. So, we're really happy for you guys and stoked to see where the next, you know, step is.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you very much. That really means the world. We're having fun. I think that's one of the most important parts of this. And I think that's what gives us the excitement to play cool gigs and to make, you know, to write interesting songs and is really the energy of it comes from just really having fun and, you know, getting to make music together. The four of us, this lineup really feels like, you know, a family unit. I've been playing music with Adam, our drummer, for, you know, over a decade. We recently reunited through this project. You know, Sean and I go back a long time, over 10 years. Justin and Sean were in a band together over a decade ago. I mean, we all have other projects and things that we've kind of done to that have led us up to this point. And we somehow through, you know, the snow globe of local music, you know, you shake it up and everyone falls down into different bands and different places. We found each other and the music that we make is so much fun and we're having a blast. So to hear compliments and to, you know, get to talk about these cool opportunities we've gotten is just really cool. So thank you guys.
I feel like it's less of a snow globe and more of the little push button game where you got to shoot the rings up, you know, and somebody was sitting there pushing it and shaking
it. There's a little intention and skill to it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, and that's how it happened is we kind of just pushed the buttons the right way and the four of us fell together and we work well together. We listen to each other's ideas and then weird shit comes out that we like and we don't care if anyone else likes it because we think it's fun.
Well, and other people are starting to like it. So that's pretty cool.
Yes.
Cool. We're stoked on that because, I mean, this all, us talking and becoming, you know, reacquainted, Sean and I have known each other for 20 years, all came about just because of the podcast and you guys doing your podcast during the downtime of the pandemic. And now we're up, 3 years on into it to see things, obviously, on the national scale kind of go back to normal. As Nate said, the grand opening, it's happening. This show's announced every day.
Soft opening.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But huge. Also to have that happened in our kind of scene. It started to, you know, blossom and flower again. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see us come out of it. And hopefully, you know, it's not over by any stretch. It's the new normal, as they say. But to have all these cool things happen, and hopefully for us to just keep this thing rolling. Let's keep these trains rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I echo what Tone said. And it's interesting, you know, being on the West Coast here and being in the industry a little bit on the side, at least a little side hustle, working in the music venues and whatnot. And, you know, a lot of the bands that I work with nationals and locals and whatnot, but having that connection to Maine through the podcast and through you guys as a band, vicariously kind of asking you guys questions and getting like real relatable answers because we're all from the same area. And also knowing that the music industry is going through this interesting transformation and you guys are part of that is really inspiring because we're all, you know, we talk about a lot of legacy bands on this podcast. And there's a lot of new bands that make a dent, but there's a new wave. There's a lot of things that are about to change, and you guys are part of that. And I think the fact that you work so hard, and you were alluding to what your mentality was for that Civic Center show, shows me and shows us, and I think shows everyone else that's paying attention, that it's not sex, drugs, rock and roll. It's like you got to take it seriously for longevity. And I think you guys are doing that. And that's why the runway is 100% there. So if you keep doing what you're doing, the good things are in store. That's why I was kind of saying, like, that Civic Center show, you know, what's next? And I was kind of an open-ended question as in, if you keep doing what you're already on par to do, I think you guys have a really strong future. So I'm stoked for you guys.
And you're not assholes. That's another key ingredient. Because there's a lot of those out there.
Mm-hmm. Truth.
Thank you, man. That means so much. And you're right. It's definitely different after the pandemic in a very good way for us. Before the pandemic, I felt like the power and the venues had a bit more of a stronghold on things. I feel like bands like us had a harder time finding opportunities like we're getting now. Tours weren't going out, not fully packaged with an opportunity for a local to jump on. I feel like, you know, just by putting our best foot forward and working as absolutely hard as we can to show the venue, the tour package, all of the entities involved, that, you know, we're a professional band that's willing to work hard and is going to put our best foot forward is like the best thing that we can do to just keep that momentum going. And we're definitely going to keep doing that. We've talked about the idea of, you know, doing some touring, maybe a couple of weeks, start small, see what's within our power to do as four dudes who have very much have day jobs. But, you know, I guess, how else do you eat an elephant, you know, just a bite at a time? And
yep, so. Absolutely, man. Cool. All right, Seth, tell us the story about Bam Margera.
Okay, so back in 2012, my former band Loki was releasing our Audio Alchemy EP. We were actually looking at the Asylum for a venue. We were like, okay, we're going to, you know, do it upright. We got the EP. We recorded with John Wyman over at the Halo. We had it mastered with Adam Ian at Gateway. Did it upright. We're going to do the CD release party. So just so happened that we double booked on the same night as Bam Margera was doing an appearance. He was in this band for like a minute called Fuckface Unstoppable. And best band name ever, by the way.
I've Fuckface never Unstoppable. Heard that in my life.
Yeah, that's a band vantage. I'd agree.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, how's this going to be? So basically they gave us the option. They're like, listen, you know, we're sorry we double booked. You can either like make it a local bill and, you know, we'll tell them, hey, like, you know, maybe, you know, cause it was sort of still like kind of up in the air. They didn't have it all hammered down. Or you can make Bam part of your CD release party. So we're like, of course we're going to do that. That's going to be amazing. So this was not very long after, unfortunately, Ryan Dunn passed away. So Bam was not in a great headspace. who else was with him? Let's see, he had a couple other members of the crew with them, but basically the band was CKY, but with Bam on vocals. So without, I think it was Darren, their vocalist. And so Jesse Margera was on drums. And I think Jesse was really there to babysit him because he was like going off the deep end at this point. So we show up at the venue. He's pretty hammered already. And it's like 5 p.m. And there was some shenanigans and whatnot. So we were told he was supposed to introduce us, which we were really excited about. And he like got super hammered and like kind of forgot. And right before we went on, he ran up the back stairs of the asylum, ran up on stage, and then asked us our band name. So he was like, okay, you know, and now Loki. And then he took a wine bottle and smashed it right in front of where my bass setup was. Like, just Jesus. Smashed a wine bottle. Wow. Right there. So the entire time at our CD release party, I'm playing on broken glass. But before that, we had told them, because they like didn't bring any gear at all, like no gear. So we basically let them use our gear, and the guitar player like messed with all the settings, and everything was all disheveled and stuff, because you can imagine the energy that they had out there. But basically we got to play our CD release party with like gear that was all messed up on broken glass with, you know, Bam, that was unfortunately, like, he was supposed to do a meet and greet. I think he kind of skipped it. So it was a little bit sad. Obviously we all grew up watching Bam and mm-hmm. you know, his heyday of, you know, being an awesome skateboarder, all the Viva La Bam show, like, you know, definitely one of those people you're like, this guy's cool. And I hope I've seen in, you know, in the last 5 years, little blips on the radar of things going better or worse. But I always hope for him that, you know, he can get it going stable again, because he's a fucking genius. He's mm-hmm.
yeah,
really smart. He's talented. He's got it all. And, you know, you can see when someone's just having a hard go at life. So I never take too much from that experience and think like, oh, geez, like this guy's a mess or whatever. Hey, you know, people go through stuff, but it was an unforgettable experience getting to play a show with him, you know.
Well, and you're like all amped up for your CD release, and yeah. You guys did it right with Halo and Adam Ian, and
yeah,
and then you're stepping on broken glass.
it was an unstoppable experience.
Exactly. And I will say, Jesse watched our whole set, and I got to meet him afterwards. He was very complimentary. Like, he was a class act. He was like super, just, you know, complimented the music, actually listened. Like, that was really cool, you know. So it was neat to get to meet him. But there was a couple other guys there with him that were pretty crazy. But anyway,
right, Brandon Novak.
Yeah, Brandon Novak. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he the one that shit himself while running in the CKY videos? Was that him?
Probably.
Probably, yeah.
That's a deep cut for you.
That's a real deep cut. Yeah.
Go look that up.
Or don't, if you got a weak stomach, you know.
Good call, John. All right, we're going to get you guys out here on that, and excited for what's coming for Troll, excited for what's coming for, you know, sharks all around Southern Maine and beyond, and in space, really. I mean, let's be honest.
Space. Yep. Sharks on a spaceship.
snakes on a plane? Yeah.
I was going to say, we got to get Samuel Allen here, yeah.
And on that note, see ya. Thanks Peace for hanging out with us, guys. Appreciate this.
Cheers, nerds.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast. YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us $1, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.